Here it is, the AEW Collision Review here on this Sunday, on this January 7, 2024. The first AEW Collision Review of 2024 here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show channel. By the way, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. Hello and welcome. This is what we're doing here. This is the first one that we're reviewing, so we're going to try and make it special, but not really. It's going to be like the others that we've done all before. You know, you knock out all your firsts of 2024, and then everything stops feeling special, right? I did the first Mr. Warren Hayes Show of 2024. I've did the first AEW Dynamite review of 2024, and now we're doing this. And then after that, it's just humdrum and nonsense. No, it's not humdrum and nonsense. I'm going to try and make this as entertaining and dynamic and fun as possible for you, the astute wrestling fan who was looking for a little analysis and a little reviews, just to see, hey, do other people like the stuff I do? And I mean, maybe I'm the guy, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm the guy that you're just going to turn to, that you're listening to, and you're like, wow, this guy's full of something. Can't say too many swear words within the first few minutes of the YouTube stuff, or else you'll get demonetized. You just got to be careful. Then after that, you know, 5-6 minutes in, I don't care anymore. What a way to start things off. What do we do? Listen, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, consider giving a like on this video or subscribing as well. You'll get so much more quality, broadcasts like this one right now. That would be tremendous. Or if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, 5-star ratings on Spotify, help out a great deal. Would love if you just took a moment to drop some of those and help grow the podcast. It's tiny little things. And, I had a very good, very good 2023 in regards to, the numbers. I would love to see another year, a 2024, equally as good in regards to the numbers. And it starts with you. you, the A-plus audience listening to the D-list podcaster. That's me. I said we were doing a review here. Do you think we should start? Do you think we should begin? Start talking about this collision. A very good collision, I thought. I thought it was a very good episode of Collision. And if anything, if any worries I had, and I don't recall where I spoke about this once the Continental Classic was concluded. I think maybe I talked about it on the Dynamite review before World's End, or did I talk about it on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show? But listen, I'll just reiterate the point really quickly. You know, I had grown to have a certain level of concern in regards to, what would AEW look like in a post Continental Classic world where we were treated to tremendous wrestling, just great shows, week after week, wrestling focused. As opposed to whatever creative woes AEW was going through, everything sort of seemed to align with making the Continental Classic the best, the best possible sports-based presentation show that AEW had put on in a while, at least since the spring, and I was a little concerned. I said this in regards to, well, what is a post C2 world going to look like for AEW now that we don't have the tournament to sort of keep us on track with wrestling? What are we going to do moving forward with the rest here, with the with the show in general, is what I'm trying to say. And listen, I thought Dynamite was good. I mean, it didn't reach, this week I didn't think it was the heights of professional wrestling, as far as in-ring work goes. I thought it was a good episode nonetheless. There was a lot of, starting off storylines. It felt like a bit of a kicking off point in two other things. So that's like, that's something there. Anyway, I don't want to reiterate all of the stuff that I talked about on Thursday. You can go watch that. But Collision this week, like I said, I thought was very good. I thought this was a very good episode. So maybe my fears regarding AEW's creative direction are a little unnecessary. I feel like there has been some sort of course correction. We've Tony Khan at the World's End press conference after the show said himself, you know, that the Continental Classic was the most fun thing he did to book, so on and so forth. And, you know, he had the data, he had the numbers, and he's like, well, we're going to focus a little more on sports-based presentation moving forward. And he said, you know, because he says, look, I've got, you know, I've seen the reactions. I have the reactions. I have the numbers. Let's just go with that, right? And I'm like, okay, this is tremendous. I mean, and Collision felt like it was in that vein. But Collision has always kind of been that as well, right? No nonsense, sticking to the basics. But this was also very good. Like, we had some really good stuff on the card here tonight. That last night, I should say. I'm recording this on the Sunday. You know how it goes. On this card here that happened on January 6, 2024, in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Bojangles Coliseum. 3,624 people, tickets distributed, I should say. Camera shots seems like there were more people to me. What do I know? If, you know, of course, this is all, according to WrestleTix, the 3,624 number. And if that is the case, again, you know, very, very soft attendance here. You know, you would have thought that. I feel, you know, if you're in Charlotte and you're trotting out Sting for likely his last match in Charlotte, North Carolina, you kind of think, I don't know how much promotion they did, is what I'm trying to say. I feel like they could have drawn a bigger crowd than this. But, you know, I feel like everything was announced last minute. This was one that could have been, this is one that I feel there could have been a little more of a promotional effort behind it. You know, I don't think this was, all that, I don't think this is a great number. And I think they could have done a lot better than 3,600, honestly. I mean, they could do better than 3,600 just about anywhere. But I think in this case here, with Sting on the way out, you know, with this being part of his retirement tour, and this being like the underlying theme of all of his matches, this is the last time he wrestles in New York, this is the last time he wrestles in Jersey, so, well, okay. I feel there could be a little more effort put into it, but, you know. Hey. The match started off with Sting, though. Sting and Darby Allin, accompanied to the ring by Richard Flair. They defeated the War Horsemen in a fine little squash-ish match. Let's call it an enhancement match, which had the War Horsemen do a lot of the work here. They tossed Darby around before the bell, and they beat up both guys on the floor as well. But things start to swing the babyface way when Darby hits a code red, a stinger splash by Sting, of course, coffin drop to the floor, and a scorpion death drop seals the deal for Sting. Look, good little dynamic opener, got the crowd into it. That's fine. Then we get to the meat and potatoes here of this Collision opener with the AEW Continental Crown being put on the line. And I guess it's all three, right? I guess when you put up the crown on the line, then it it's all three titles. But Eddie Kingston, the champ, defeated Trent Barretta. And this was a blast. Tremendous stuff. Just two guys beating the hell out of each other. Again, I'm a simple man. I don't necessarily require, don't get me wrong. I enjoy myself these complex, technical, twisty matches as well. But sometimes all you want to see is two guys beat the shit out of each other and do it well. This is what happened here. And I'm not going to lie. Look, if all Continental Crown defenses are going to be under this umbrella here, because look, the way Eddie won his match against Danielson to win the Blue League, the way he won against Mox, and the way he won with Trent here tonight, there's a through line here in how these matches were executed. Very physical, very very callbacky-ish, but fights. They feel like fights. And this is this could be absolutely a very different color. I don't want to go back to the flavors of ice cream thing, but this is a very different style of high-level wrestling that we could get from AEW that no one else on the card really delivers so consistently on. If this is how this championship is going to be defended, if it's going to be under this style, I am okay with this. I'm excited for it. Because, I think the floor that's been set is pretty high. I really like this. Sue is at ringside. Trent's mom. She's got a tissue in hand. Ready to cry, I guess. I don't know. Maybe she has allergies. She's keeping that ready to sneeze into. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's more than a tissue. Maybe it was like a little chamois. She comes up to the railing and she just like cleans with her chamois. She just rubs down the railing and I don't know. But Trent gets in control early on in this match with a suplex and some chops. Eddie Kingston lands the machine gun chops, and then he lands one extra chop right in Trent's face, who tumbles to the ground, and Trent starts bleeding from the nose, but from the bridge of the nose, he's okay. Like his nose was not broken. This was part of the thing here. He went up, he went to the floor and he bladed. Eddie Kingston follows him out. Beats him up on the floor a little bit. Lands a Saito. Trent finally fights back. The suicide dive. A sit-out power bomb. We get a DDT and an exploder by Eddie Kingston. A gotch pile driver by Trent. And listen, they are just throwing bombs at each other. Big moves. I'm digging it. I love it. And it's the Northern Lights bomb that puts it away for Eddie Kingston. I gave this 4 stars. I thought this was great. Tremendous stuff. I'm telling you, if this is how they're going to approach the Continental Crown moving forward, give us fights, I'm okay with it. This is it's going to have its own little flavor. Tony Schiavone earlier in the day had a pre-tape with Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander, and they're talking about how excited they are for the rest of the year. They mentioned Stokely, and Chris Statlander has an iguana. Then we have a video of Hook saying that he's going to be challenging Samoa Joe for the world title. Look, if there's one thing that I've enjoyed with what AEW's been doing, they start with the world championship, right? They set this up while Max was still champion and is. Suddenly the world champion becomes behest by challengers, right? That's the English major can't figure out the idioms anymore. There we go. He's behest from all sides by challengers, right? At some point, Max was, he was Samoa Joe and Wardlow and Adam Page. And I like that. Like, that's how your world championship situation should be. The world champ should feel like he's under siege. That there's, the tribes are coming from all sides after him, kind of thing. And I think this is very good that Hook is thrown into the mix here. Because look, we've had Wardlow, via Adam Cole, say Wardlow's coming after the world championship. Swerve mentions it at every given opportunity. And now Hook. And Hook is like, look, I have one of the best records in AEW. Why am I not challenging for the world title? All right. This could be a lot of fun. You get yourself a nice little Dynamite main event. And, this is not your money-drawing pay-per-view feud here, but it's good stuff. Then we had the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles in a Proving Ground match where the Kingdom, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, defeated Brian Keith and Commander. Are we calling them the Undisputed Kingdom? Like when they're just the Kingdom? When it's just Taven and Bennett? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Fine little match here with the Kingdom attacking the babyfaces during the Code of Honor. Brian Keith is your babyface in peril for the majority of the match here. Commander gets the hot tag, but the Kingdom get the win nonetheless with the double team move. It was fine. Good little match. And a neat little 8-minute match. The 3-star, the gentleman 3-star special, and there you go. Backstage, we go to Renee Paquette. She's with Bullet Club Gold, and they start talking, and the Acclaimed arrive. And the Bullet Club Gold are kind of like, hey, what are you guys doing here? What's this all about? And they go back and forth. And Anthony Bowens starts to talk about how he says, the only thing I've learned in AEW is the only way to get to the top is through factions. All right. Okie dokie. And tell that to Samoa Joe. Tell that to MJF. Tell that to John Moxley. Anyway. And basically he starts drawing comparisons and he says, look at us and look at you, Jay, with the Bullet Club where you, you ran roughshod through, it was more than running roughshod. I mean, it's the fucking Bullet Club and he was the leader. I don't want to overthink this too much, but basically the Acclaimed are offering up a partnership with Bullet Club Gold, and like, well, why don't you guys come and join in? No, we'll think about it. I don't know how I feel about the Acclaimed and Bullet Club Gold in a feud type situation. I don't know. I like Jay White a lot, and I think he's, I don't want to say he's underused, because I don't think he's underused. I think I think they've been using him well, but I think his outcomes have been not that great, and I think he is a tremendous talent. I think he could be a top guy for the company. I think he should be a top guy for the company. In a promotion where promos are part and parcel and where most of the top guys are tremendous promo artists. Jay White is right up there. He's been doing phenomenal work. Is this a little under him? Well, maybe it's a little placeholder feud. I don't know. I still don't know how to feel about how they're positioning Jay White moving forward, but we'll see. Adam Copeland hits the ring. He has a microphone in hand, breaks down what happened at World's End. And he says, Christian Cage says, back, you know, I beat you, so back to the line. And he says, but I'm due an automatic rematch because I'm a former champion. I'm like, wait a second. Now, he reneged on the rematch thing, but no. What are we doing here? Automatic rematch clauses. As far as I know, they don't exist in AEW, and they may have been pulled out a couple of times, and I think we all groaned. Is Edge doing some headcanon? Is he still, you know, does he assume that the WWE rules still apply here? Because he's like, to his credit, he was like, no, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to work my way up because that's what I do. Essentially, that was the gist of his promo here. I don't ever want to hear about automatic rematches ever again in AEW, though. I don't ever want to hear anyone speak those words in a promo unless when they say those words, it's followed by, it's shit. I have no interest in that at all. But he's going to work hard. He's going to do all the work, and he's opening the Cope Open. It's just going to be open challenges. Hey, who wants to fight the old Copeland? And he just opens up the challenge. And it is answered by Griff Garrison, who comes out with Maria Kanellis and Cole Carter. They're a thing in Ring of Honor. And Griff takes the microphone. He, to introduce himself. Tries to bring back the old who the fuck is Griff Garrison thing. And he demands Copeland show him some respect since he's the guy who, answered the challenge. And Copeland says, oh, I like you. You know, you remind me of myself when I was just a wee spry child. That's not what he said. He says, you're stepping out from below sea level up to Mount Everest. Griff slaps him, and we have ourselves a match. And there you go. Adam Copeland defeats Griff Garrison. A bit of an enhancement match. You know, Griff is given quite a bit of offense here by Copeland, and Maria Kanellis distracts Copeland, which allows Griff to get going in this match, has an extended heat segment. Copeland fights back, lands a flying crossbody, but then runs into a discus punch by Garrison. But it's a superplex by Copeland into the impaler and right into a crossface that gets the win. Fine, little match, got nothing bad to say about it. Here's the thing that I've noticed about Edge, and this is, you know, probably realizing how things go along, probably some of his old buddies telling him, hey, you know, this is, he's trying stuff out here. You remember a few weeks ago when he did his first few promos and he was going off script a little bit, you know, he was, replying spontaneously to things, which is something I don't think that you necessarily have the leverage to do in WWE because they want you to stick to the script and whatnot. It's like he's going to get this out of his system and then he's going to find out how things work here in AEW, right? And he had his first couple of matches, which I thought were very WWE-like, but I feel like he's understanding the vibe here in AEW, that there's certain things that he needs to do here or that he can do here that he couldn't do or could get away with in WWE, if that makes sense. And I think that this finish here, where he didn't finish the match with a spear, where he's trying, you know, he does something else. He does the crossface. Sure, the impaler is an old finisher of his, but doing the superplex into the impaler, into the crossface, I think that he's understanding that that things work a little differently in AEW, that it's not a question of just coming out doing your entrance and hitting a couple of things. He has to work, and I think he wants to work. I think this is proof that he that he's willing to, you know, he said in the promo, I'm going to put in the work. Part of it is storyline, but I also think, based on what I saw here, and based on what I saw at World's End, I think he's ready to put in the work. I think he wants to overcome some of the criticisms that he had, especially during his final WWE run, where he was just going through the motions and things were kind of dull. I don't think he's okay with it, and I think it comes across as such. So I'm excited to see how he continues in a post-Christian Cage feud world. I mean, we're going to revisit this feud, don't get me wrong, but I think it's a good way to keep Copeland alive and interesting to say, look, he's still my target, and he can have another program or two. In the meantime, we can create some distance between Copeland and Cage 4? No, 3? If we're being honest. I mean, if we're being technical, it's 4. But I think we can create some distance here. We get a promo backstage with Sting, Flair, and Darby Allin, where Flair is putting over the Greensboro final retirement match for Sting over at Revolution in February. But he says, you know, in the meantime, there's going to be a big stop in Jacksonville next week, and trying to hype up some business, draw in some business, and Sting goes off. Look, Sting said, oh, I'm going to do an old school promo. And that's pretty much what it was. And it was fine. It was all right. Just nothing really to break down. Aside from Darby Allin just standing there and trying not to laugh, I guess. Sky Blue defeated Kira Hogan. I'm going to tell you, find yourself someone who loves you as much as Tony Khan loves putting Sky Blue on TV. I think she is contractually obligated to be on television at least once per week, right? No reaction for Kira Hogan, like crickets. I don't know. I thought this was okay. They felt out of position in some circumstances. I don't know. Then we get the Serena Deeb video package that we got at World's End. So they're running that one again. Pardon me. Then we got Claudio Castagnoli defeating the 7-foot Andrew Everett. He's not really 7 feet, if you don't know who he is. A bit of a squash here for old Claudio. This was fine. He's going to be fighting Adam Page on Wednesday. So you give Claudio a bit of a warm-up. That's fine. Then we get the tag team champs backstage, Ricky Starks and Big Bill. Starks is talking about returning as the champion to Daly's place. He says that this is going to be his first singles match with Sammy Guevara, despite the fact that they've had, you know, a first singles match in AEW. You know, that they've crossed paths in the past and whatnot, but this is going to be the first time here. And Big Bill goes a step forward and he says that he challenges Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho to a tag team title match next week at Battle of the Belts next Saturday. Hopefully you guys will be there. But the match was made; it's official. This is the first mention of Chris Jericho since World's End, for reasons. I mean, there's a Battle of the Belts happening next week, folks. There's going to be a lot of wrestling next weekend. I don't know if you realize this. There's the Battle in the Valley show. There's Impact Hard to Kill. And then you have your usual Collision, and now you've got Battle of the Belts on top of that. A lot of stuff next weekend happening. And this leads us to our main event, where FTR defeated the House of Black duo of Malakai Black and Buddy Matthews. I thought this was a tremendous main event. I thought this was great. There's some more There's some control periods between both guys, both teams, I should say here, until House of Black properly get in control. They keep Cash Wheeler from getting the hot tag to Dax, who eventually does after a power slam by Cash. Dax hits a brain buster. FTR go for the powerplex, but Malakai Black lifts the knees and Buddy Matthews flies in to break up the cover with a flying knee in a tremendous spot. That was very well executed. I'm always very weary of guys flying in off the top rope to break up pins. I feel like we're always a step behind, like the timing is always a little off and the ref has to compensate. I thought the timing on this was very good. I thought this was very, very well done. Malakai Black brings in a chair and he teases using it to Dax's family who are ringside, you know, his wife and his beautiful daughter. They were all there. FTR lands a shatter machine, but the pin is broken up. Spike Piledriver follows by FTR on the apron, which was tremendous. Brody King shows up, but Dan Garcia pops in as well and takes him out with a chair. Buddy Matthews back in the ring goes for a jackknife cover on Dax, but Dax reverses it and gets the surprise pin. FTR, as we mentioned, win. But after the match, Garcia hops into the match to celebrate with FTR. The House of Black attack all three guys. And they beat down all three of the babyfaces. Meanwhile, Julia Hart is there. She popped out of nowhere because she's spooky. And she does a 10 bell salute, which I thought was tremendous. And just a good beatdown. House of Black stand tall. We're not done here. Look, I thought this was very good. I thought everyone looked motivated. It was a fun match. I thought it was well put together. I thought it was well executed. I had a good time. I think it was a great main event. And if these guys want to go at it some more, let's go at it some more. You're adding Dan Garcia and Brody back into the mix here so we could get some trios possibilities here as well. I'm all for this. Let's go right ahead and... let's go right ahead and make things happen in a tremendous main event to close off the first collision of the year. And that's how we're going to close off the first review of AEW Collision of the Year. Hope you enjoyed it. I sure did. I enjoyed putting it together. And if you enjoyed it, why don't you show how much you enjoyed it by leaving a like on this video on youtube.com/MrWarrenHayes or a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or a 5-star rating on Spotify. There you go. I will be back on Wednesday for the Mr. Warren Hayes show proper. We're going to be reviewing Wrestle Kingdom. We're going to be previewing all the shows that are happening this weekend as well. So be sure to be there. Record live on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Otherwise, you can catch the replay. You can catch it on demand. That's what I'm trying to say. On Sunday. So there you go. But in the meantime, look, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you for being here, and I will see you next time.